just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Here we have a quiet little motel, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime. Get down to
business. Hey zombies, and welcome to another episode of the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. This week on the podcast, we are finishing up the actual movies in the Psycho franchise with Psycho 4. My name is Ron Martin, I am your host, and Morty is not with us today because I am doing this in the daytime as opposed to nighttime. Morty actually is at work. You don't want to know what he does for a living, trust me on this. Also, because I kind of screwed Tyler over, we have a surprise guest host this week that proves that if you email us enough and yell at us enough, we will eventually let you on the show.
Thanks.
So this week, our guest host is Jessica. Jessica, say hi to the listeners.
Hello.
Jessica, have you been on another podcast before, or is this your first time?
No, I have not.
So you haven't emailed anyone else enough that they would say, just come on the show?
Nope.
Thank you for stepping in and watching Psycho 4.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yes, I owe you big time for watching Psycho 4. Jessica, do you know what your favorite horror movie franchise is?
I think it's probably Halloween.
The whole franchise? Are we talking Rob Zombie stuff as well?
I like the whole thing. The only one that I was not ever too, into was Halloween 3, which we all know had nothing to do with the rest of them. And I do like Rob Zombie's movies. I think they're way darker, and I think that they're way more violent. But every one of his movies is always white trash, which kind of gets on your nerves after a while, but...
I mean, that's just how I grew up. Is there a car coming through your apartment? What?
Yes.
Someone is driving a car through Jessica's apartment right now.
No. I can't believe you can hear that so loudly. There's a parking lot across from my apartment building, and apparently someone's alarm has fallen off.
Obviously, a listener who's upset that they didn't get the chance to guest host the podcast this week.
Oh. Oh, yeah, maybe so, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, they just came... See, it stopped. they just came to tell me off.
I like Rob Zombie. I like his music. I'm not a big fan of his Halloween movies.
Yeah, I've never listened to his music before.
I like Devil's Rejects, but I think...
I couldn't watch that.
It can be hard to watch in certain places.
Yeah, his movies are... extremely violent, obviously. And that one was just, I don't know, to me it was kind of like even more over the top.
I'm just against remakes in general too, so that doesn't help for sure. And to remake one of the, best horror movies of all time. And we'll get to Halloween eventually as a franchise, but if history proves anything, it's probably that we will not be doing the Rob Zombie Halloween movies with that franchise. I'll just take 5 minutes to dog it during the wrap-up show. Jessica, are you ready for some horror news?
Of course.
Are you sad that Hammer's not here to give you Hammer horror news?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think two is enough on the podcast. Too many people.
Hammer horror news is different horror news than my horror news.
Oh, okay.
Hammer horror news is when you show up and you're like, hey, don't get started yet. I got to find some news. So then you take 10 minutes to find news. Jessica, have you ever heard of this little franchise that I like to call The Return of the Living Dead?
Yes, I have.
Do you know who Tarman is?
Who is?
Tarman.
Oh, no.
Tarman is the zombie guy who was in the container in the very first Return of the Living Dead movie. And he came out and he looks all gross. And he's in every one of the Return of the Living Dead movies. I think there's 5 of them now.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I've watched them.
I've seen, I think, 3 of the 5.
I was never much of a zombie fan. I mean, maybe a little bit more now that we're saturated with them.
one day, if we ever release the old Zombie Reckoning podcasts, we actually did Return of the Living Dead in one of the podcasts. We put it up against the Lost Boys in the in the battle for teen angst.
Okay.
I won't tell you who won, but those are two of my favorite movies. So, our friends over at Fright Rags, and I say our friends, not knowing, having any idea who these people are, but anyway, they've put together a Tarman limited edition box set. See, I was going somewhere with this the whole time.
Okay.
Because I'm a professional.
Of course.
I'm a professional amateur podcast host. Anyway, in this box set, which is not cheap, it's like $88.
Wow.
You get a collector's face mask of Tarman. And everyone on that's listening to the podcast right now, if you don't know who Tarman is, just go to Google Images and type in Tarman. Each mask is handmade and individually painted, so this is probably why the set is so expensive. You also get a limited edition t-shirt in the box, which comes in sizes from small to 5X, because, let's be honest, most horror fans probably are closer to the 5X. If you've ever been to a Comic Con or a horror convention, usually the 5X sells out before the XL. And you also get a collector's box, which they just put that in there, I think, because, of course, you get a box. What else is it going to come in? But anyway, if you're a big, huge Tarman fan and you have $88 just burning up your pocket, check out Fright Rags. I believe it's frightrags.com, and you can spend that $88. But if you really, really want to get rid of $88, you know, drive by my house. Jessica, do you believe in vampires?
Do I believe in what?
Vampires.
I would like it if they were real, but I think if there are, it's just people who are crazy and think they're vampires, so they drink people's blood. But really, they're just a crazy person, or they have some sort of deficiency.
Well, if you drink people's blood, doesn't that make you a vampire? Like, legit?
No, because if you're going to... I like a vampire who is sleeping during the day and who doesn't die. I mean, that's the most important thing, is the immortality and the inability to get human disease. I mean, who wants to be a vampire if all you're doing is drinking people's blood and you just die and get old like everybody else? That's boring.
Yeah, that's a... we call those stupid vampires.
Exactly. So, like, I want to be like, you know, if I was a vampire, I would want to be like an Anne Rice vampire, or even a vampire on True Blood. And, you know, they're all really good looking, and they were made into vampires when they were younger, so, you know, they're not old looking vampires, and they seem to have a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, you know what would really suck? If you became a vampire, like, at 50? You're like,
yes.
Really? You're going to keep me at 50 years old forever?
Right. Not good.
I get up every day, take my arthritis pills, still, because I'm a vampire.
Yeah. No. No, and actually there was a character in the Anne Rice vampire books that was made into a vampire when he was like 70 years old.
So that's the point. That blows. Are you familiar with this country called Poland?
Mm-hmm.
In a Polish city called Gliwice?
Uh-huh.
Whatever. If a listener is Polish and they know how to pronounce that, contact me. Anyway, in this Polish city, they found a mass grave with four skeletons in it. In this grave, the skeletons' heads had the skeletons had been beheaded. The dead had been beheaded, and the head had been placed at the foot of the grave, indicating that the people who buried these people thought these guys might be vampires and were making sure that they weren't going to come back.
Right.
That proves that they're real.
I don't know about that, because a long time ago, they had no way to prove that someone was actually dead. So that was one thing. And then on top of that, they didn't understand when you die, that when they dug people up and their nails had grown or their hair had grown, it meant that they were still alive. Or if they had, like, blood or fluid around their mouth, but that was just the decomposition process. Like, your hair doesn't grow, your skin shrinks back, so it looks like your hair got longer. And same thing with the nails. The nails, your skin shrinks back, so your nails start to look like they're growing longer, and they're not. And then because they weren't embalming people, obviously they were going to be bubbling up as they started to decompose.
I understand all that, but I just want to believe that there were four vampires in Poland that got killed.
The logic behind that back in the day, because they didn't have all the stuff that we have now and the science and all that.
Logic is overrated. For the next news story, have you been watching Bates Motel?
I did watch the whole season, which I'm sure is more than you can say.
I have watched most of the whole season, and I will have the entire season watched before next week, because on the wrap-up show, I will talk extensively about the Bates Motel.
Oh, cool. Okay.
By extensively, I mean under 7 minutes. Do you want to hear? I have spoilers for next season.
Oh, I don't know about that. Wait a minute. Why are you looking at spoilers if you haven't seen the last episode from this season?
That's what I do.
That's dumb.
They're not really real spoilers, but if you really don't want to hear and you're listening out there, you know, fast forward the next 3 minutes. But these are just three new characters that will probably show up on Bates Motel next season. The first is a guy named George, who is a divorced guy who might be a romantic interest for Norma.
Uh-huh.
The second is a socialite who is in her late 30s, who will probably be a good friend of Norma's, and I'm sure she'll end up dying at some point.
Okay.
And Norma's estranged brother is going to show up at some point in season 2 as well. See, that wasn't too bad.
No.
I
would just like to add that I like it, but I was not disturbed by anything in the show more than I was the first episode.
The rape scene in the first episode?
That was difficult to watch.
I agree. But I think that's
she's
because,
a good actress.
That's because Vera Farmiga does a really good job, yeah. She's going to be in The Conjuring, which is coming out this week. This coming week from this podcast. And if you really want to know about The Conjuring, I'll actually be a guest on Movie Podcast Weekly talking about The Conjuring next Sunday. So if you are really into The Conjuring and you really like to hear my voice, or I put your kids to sleep or something, you can go over to Movie Podcast Weekly and download that, and there you go. Speaking of Bates Motel, we seem to have this new fad right now where it seems like any horror franchise that they can find, they're going to make into a TV series. We got Bates Motel. We recently had Hannibal. I know that they green-lighted the Scream pilot for MTV.
Oh, did they? I didn't know that.
Summer 2014.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, I knew they were talking about it, but I didn't know.
And they, I think the CW or something has a series coming out based on The Exorcist. So Fox has jumped into this horror TV show gig. They are premiering Sleepy Hollow this September.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about that.
From what I can tell, it looks pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the same thing.
Like the other horror movie TV shows have done pretty well, because I think that the people who created these shows respect the material. But this is I think this is a cash in. Just like, hey, this is popular right now, so let's do this.
Right.
But anyway, Sleepy Hollow has been announced for this fall on Fox. I'll probably watch the first two episodes and then abandon it. Okay, one last horror news story before we get to the movie proper. And if Hammer were here, he would yell at me for saying proper.
Yeah, that is an annoying thing.
Hey, we all have our words, our crutch words, okay? What's wrong with that? Movie proper.
I don't know. This is annoying. I guess Hammer feels the same way I do.
The sixth film in the Child's Play franchise, The Curse of Chucky, will be released on Blu-ray and DVD September 24th. So you can watch your Sleepy Hollow on Fox, and then you can pick up The Curse of Chucky on DVD. Are you a big fan of the Chucky series?
Well, of course I love the first one, and that actually was a scary one, and Susan Sarandon's ex-husband is in that one. He was also in the original Fright Night. His name is Chris Sarandon, and he plays the cop in the first one. I like him, and that movie was scary, but after the first one, I went downhill.
I can't get behind like this little doll killing people. Like I would just kick him. Really, is all I would do.
And of course the other thing is Brad Dourif, who I love. Like I love to see him. I love his voice. I love I just love him. I would watch any horror movie he was in.
Yeah, Brad Dourif. I like Brad Dourif as well. Even though I didn't like The Exorcist 3, he was good in the movie for all his voices. But speaking of Chris Sarandon, do you know what I would think that Chris Sarandon would be like most famous for? He's the voice of Jack Skellington on Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, you know, I've never seen that movie.
Really?
Nope.
He does the voice of Jack Skellington, who's the main character. And he does Jack Skellington in wherever you see Jack Skellington, in video games, in rides at Disney World, wherever. That's Chris Sarandon doing the voice. So a lot of times when these people do Disney movies like The Nightmare Before Christmas, which you really ought to see, they'll sign deals where they want to use the character in the theme park, or if they want to use the character in a video game or something, then they'll have to come back and voice the character.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Which is a lot of times why they like to use non-celebrities.
Uh-huh.
Because they're going to have a better shot at getting in to sign that deal. Well, that's it for horror news, unless you have something that you wanted to add.
Nope.
Have you listened to the first three podcasts on Psycho?
Yep.
So, and you've watched Psycho 4?
Yep.
So you are overly prepared to talk about Psycho 4 at the beginning.
Yup, I even took notes, which I don't think I needed to do, but I just jotted down some stuff that I noticed.
I take notes all the time. If you also took notes, then you're one step ahead of Hammer the last 48 episodes. For the record, this is our 52nd episode. So 52 weeks, 1 year, 52 episodes, and 54 movies, because we had two podcasts where we did two movies.
Wow.
Not counting, of course, the wrap-up show. So I guess that's technically not 54 movies. But I don't want to do that math. So every good horror franchise needs a prequel, correct?
Uh-huh.
Actually, that's false. You probably should never do a prequel.
I shouldn't have said uh-huh.
But in 1990, the people behind the Psycho franchise decided, well, Psycho needs a prequel. So we get this made for Showtime Entertainment movie, Psycho 4, The Beginning. Here's the thing. Do you know who Joseph Stefano is?
I don't know. It doesn't really ring a bell.
You probably shouldn't know, and most people probably don't know. But he's the guy who wrote the screenplay for the original Psycho.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And they got him back to write the screenplay for Psycho 4.
Okay.
You know, hindsight being 2020, that was probably a mistake. Because Joseph Stefano basically said, you know what, I didn't write Psycho 2, and I didn't write Psycho 3, so I'm going to act like it never happened.
Yeah, I kind of did notice that, which I probably didn't notice it the first time I saw the sequels, but it seemed like it had nothing to do with the previous two.
Yeah, which kind of sucks, because I thought Psychos 2 and 3 provided us with a complicated but a very good storyline.
Mm-hmm.
For why Norman's as screwed up as he is.
Right, yeah.
And just stand alone, even without all of the continuity, just stand alone. I thought they both were decent movies. But Stefano decided that he wasn't going to use any information from those movies, that he's not going to continue the continuity from those movies. Anthony Perkins had already pitched an idea for Psycho 4 with the writer from Psycho 3. Let me ask you this. The idea that Perkins had for Psycho 4 wasn't the prequel. The idea would be the Bates Motel and the Bates household had been turned into a haunted attraction for Halloween Horror Nights. And Norman Bates would have escaped from the mental institution, which he was in at the end of Psycho 3, and would have taken over the role of Norman Bates in this scary attraction. And basically, I can assume that people would have died.
Yeah.
Would that have been better than what we got?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I kind of think so, too. But at the same time, this is 1990, and Hollywood wasn't really ready for the meta stuff. And Hollywood wasn't really ready to poke fun at itself yet.
Right.
I mean, that didn't come until after 96 when Scream came out and was such a big deal. Now, I think that pitch on Psycho probably would have been pushed through like in a 98 or 99. But at that point, Anthony Perkins was already dead. So he didn't get to direct this movie, and his other guy didn't get to write the movie, basically because Hollywood said, look, Psycho 3, which you directed and he wrote, didn't do very well. So we're going to kind of go our own way. We're going to bring in this guy, Mick Garris, and we're going to let him direct. You're familiar with the work of Mick Garris, correct?
Yes.
Even though he's not here for me to make fun of him, much to the chagrin of Hammer, Mick Garris also wrote Hocus Pocus.
Oh, and you love that movie, don't you?
I love it.
I don't understand that.
You don't understand Critter, Hocus Pocus?
I don't understand that you love it, and I don't understand why you think it's a horror movie, because it is not.
I didn't say it was a horror movie. I think it's a good, like, beginner horror movie for your kids. But I think it's a movie that perfectly encapsulates the atmosphere of Halloween, and it's just a fun movie. But to make Hammer happy, since Mick Garris wrote one of the movies that he hates for some reason, Mick Garris also directed an episode of Pretty Little Liars this year.
Oh, yes, I know he loves that show.
Which, if he keeps posting Pretty Little Liars things on my Facebook page, he's going to get a visit from me at his home, and he's not going to like it.
I think it must be the fact that his wife likes it, and his age, too, because, well, he turned 30, but he was previously in his 20s.
Yeah, now he's old. Now he's old.
Yeah, and I can't, like, I can try to watch those shows, and I might get through one season, but then I just get bored with them. You know what I mean?
Pretty much a show that has a bunch of teenage-looking pretty girls probably isn't for me.
You'd rather the ugly teenage girls?
I'm too old for that, so it would look creepy if I was watching that at this point. But you can always tell a Mick Garris movie whenever you see Cynthia Garris, because she is in every single one of his movies.
He did tell me that. I didn't know that before.
But he always casts her in a small role that doesn't really matter that much. In this movie, she plays she's like the technician of the radio show. I mean, she has some lines, but she's not an intricate part of the movie.
No.
And you know what? She's good enough in the roles that she plays that it doesn't really... I have no problem with him casting his wife. Like, I have no problem with Rob Zombie casting his wife, because she does fine in the roles that he cast her in. He casts her
I don't think she's bad. Everyone complains about it, but I don't...
I think she does fine in the roles that he gives her. Yeah. Most importantly, Cynthia Garris, Mick Garris' wife, obviously, she was the... Crap, what's one of her? Oh, she was the choreographer for Linnea Quigley's horror workout. The people at Universal decide that they're going to make this movie, they're going to make it a prequel. They got Mick Garris on board, they got Hilton Green back on board. And actually, if you watch the movie, some versions of the movie even go out of their way to make sure Hilton Green's is the first name that you see, even before Anthony Perkins. And around 1990, Universal Studios said, you know what, we got this little project we're working on in Orlando. We're trying to open a theme park to compete with Disney World. And it would be really nice if we had like a major movie that was filming there as we opened. So they decided that they were going to film Psycho 4 at Universal Studios in Orlando.
Oh.
Have you ever been to Universal Studios?
No. I have been to Disney World, but we didn't have a lot of time. So I didn't get to see anything.
Apparently, if you went to the Universal Studios when it first opened, you could watch them film Psycho 4.
Oh.
And because of that, they had to film several different endings to the movie, because they didn't want word to get out as to what happened.
Oh.
And apparently until 1998, the set for Psycho 4 of the Bates Motel and the Bates household was still up, and you could go, I guess, check it out. I don't know.
That's cool.
I know that the original Bates house, I don't know, I don't think the motel's still there, but I know the original Bates house they use is still on the studio property at Universal Studios in California. They have the original writer of Psycho, the screenplay. They have Mick Garris. Anthony Perkins has signed on for the movie. They get some pretty big names, really, for a made-for-Showtime movie. I think Olivia Hussey, even in 1990, was like a huge name, a huge guest.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who she is. She actually, what's weird is she did filming for this movie, and then she did filming for It, which is one of our one-night stand movies, shortly after. And, of course, she also was the star of Black Christmas, which which was one of our other one-night stand movies, actually, thanks to Jessica. Yep. For those of you who didn't enter the contest to pick the one-night stand movie, back in the day, Jessica did, and she got her movie reviewed. So, it works, kids.
The only thing bad about that is it's actually a good movie, so it's probably funnier when you review a bad movie or something that has bad components, because then you could make fun of it, you know?
Well, with our one-night stand podcast, we've been, like, really up and down as to sometimes they're good movies and sometimes they're really terrible movies.
Yeah, like, I imagine that Killer Condom thing was horrific.
I mean, Hammer really, really hated it, but I thought it was all right for what it was.
And even the It movie, like, if you read the book and then see the movie, you're like, oh, what a disaster.
The Killer Condom had a book?
No, I'm saying even the It. When you did It as your one-night stand, like, if you read the book and then you go see the movie, you're just like, ugh.
I agree, but I think that if you haven't read the book, I think it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
And even though I hate remakes, I will probably watch the remake of It, because I think that advances in special effects could really help it out.
Mm-hmm. I agree, too. Yep. Although, like we've said before, I mean, I don't know how you could beat the original Pennywise.
Yeah. Whoever is playing Pennywise has big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Also in this movie is CCH Pounder in one of her, like, very first roles. CCH Pounder basically is a lady that when you see her in anything, you're going to say, oh, what do I know her from? And you're immediately going to go to your IMDb.
Is that the lady from the radio?
Yeah. And since it's a prequel, you have to have a younger version of Norman Bates. They decided that Henry Thomas would be a good choice for that. Do you know who Henry Thomas is, Jessica?
Wait. So I'm going to say this, and I could be wrong, because I was trying to figure out why he looks so familiar to me. Is he the E.T. kid?
He is the E.T. kid.
Okay. And he's still around. I looked at his IMDb, and for some reason I didn't look back far enough, so I didn't see that last night. But he's had steady work since he was a kid, like even this year.
Which is odd for me, because anybody who watched Psycho 4 probably would give him work.
Wouldn't give him work?
I wouldn't give him work if I was after Psycho 4.
Well, I thought the physical resemblance was pretty good, but yeah, I don't know about... He wasn't too scary. You know?
I don't think that he did anything that was very good in this movie. I know that at one point Anthony Perkins pulled him aside, because, you know, we've discussed this on the other podcast. Anthony Perkins is, you know, trying to protect the legacy of Norman Bates.
Right.
And he's the only person up to this point that's ever played Norman Bates.
Right.
So when he has somebody else who's going to play Norman Bates, he's going to pull him aside and say, look, this is how I play him, and this is, you know, this is what we do. And basically, Henry Thomas blew him off. Which seems pretty stupid to me if you're a young actor and you have this very accomplished...
Yeah, that is dumb.
You have this very accomplished actor trying to give you some hints, you know? Yeah. And I think that it shows. I think that, okay, this movie basically... It's two separate storylines.
Uh-huh, yeah.
One with a suburban Norman Bates calling into a radio show talking about his past.
Right.
Which leads into flashbacks of a young Norman Bates and his mother and, you know, whatever happens before the actual Psycho movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that... there's a big drop off when we go from the Anthony Perkins scenes to the Henry Thomas scenes.
Yeah, I agree. The way that the movie was done, I mean, you could almost just listen to the parts with Anthony Perkins. You didn't even have to really watch, because there wasn't a lot of action until towards the end.
Originally, they had planned on doing the flashbacks in black and white.
Oh, okay.
Just as an homage to the original Psycho, and because, you know, it's a flashback or whatever. Do you think that would have made it better?
I don't know. It's hard to say without, you know, knowing what it would have looked like had they done it. He's a really strong actor, and I can't honestly imagine, no matter how many of those movies he would have done, you know, I don't think he would have ever done a bad job.
I'm kind of with you on that.
You know, but I think he always held up his end. But it's just hard to say because if they're going to put, you know, this other, you know, they have the guy playing him as a young person and they're going to do that flashback stuff. It's just hard to say. It just, like you said, it wasn't the strong portion of the movie at all.
Did you recognize the guy with the beard in the radio station?
No, I did not.
It was John Landis.
Oh, I should have. I love him. He's such a nerd. I love him.
He was kind of a nerd in the movie, too. The movie revolves around this... Well, part of the movie revolves around this radio show, the Fran Ambrose show, which, like I said, I don't know if they deal with psychological issues all the time, but for this particular episode, they're dealing with matricide.
Yeah.
Luckily for Fran, Norman Bates is a regular listener of her show. So he decides to call in and use the alias Ed. Do you know the significance of the alias Ed?
No. I'm starting to feel dumb.
When Psycho was written, the serial killer Ed Gein was one of the...
Yeah. I would have known that if you hadn't put it that way.
Yeah,
I didn't pick up on it either last night.
I knew beforehand,
but I'm saying, like, when I watched it, and even just said it now, I didn't pick up on it, but yeah. I already knew that. Like, I knew that...
The Ed Gein was one of the...
inspiration. Because he's the same... It's the same with...
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right, exactly, yeah. Because he used to make the skins into stuff after he killed people.
Yep, he was also one of... He was also one of the inspirations for Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. So he gets around.
Yes, he does.
But that's a little nod to Ed Gein, one of the inspirations for the character of Norman Bates. And basically, Norman basically spills his guts to Fran about stuff that he did when he was younger, including killing his mother. Now, like we said, the screenwriter decided that he did not want to use the continuity of Psycho 2 and 3.
Right.
So basically, in this version, Norman was in a mental institution for, like, 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Got out of the mental institution, married his psychologist, and knocked her up.
But that was not intentional.
And now Norman Bates is leading the American dream suburban lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
Because that's where we need our Norman Bates, is in suburbia.
Right.
With a 2-car garage and a boat.
I have to say, the women in this movie were all beat. Like, the women that he killed when he was a teenager were beat, and then his wife.
Obviously, Joseph Stefano, the guy who wrote it, probably has some female issues.
Yeah, the girls that he killed when he was supposed to be a teenager.
The storyline basically is Norman telling what led up to his mother's death.
Right.
And then we go back and forth between flashbacks before Norma Bates' death, and then we'd come back to the current day, or at least current day for 1990, Norman Bates telling his story.
Right.
And basically saying that he has to kill somebody else to keep us interested in that part of the storyline and to keep Anthony Perkins in the movie. I do think this would have worked better if it was just a straight-up prequel without Anthony Perkins.
No. He's the strongest part of these movies. I mean, that's why if you took Michael Myers out of Halloween.
They did.
I know, and it really didn't make any sense, and it didn't work, except for some people who somehow got this, like, you know, obsession with that movie and like it, but... For the people who went to the movies to see Halloween and Michael Myers, they were sadly disappointed.
Let me ask you this, you know, since you're a girl, I'm assuming with the name Jessica that you're a girl.
Yes.
like
a guy?
Do you think that Anthony Perkins is a good-looking guy?
I do, actually, yeah. And, I mean, if you look at pictures of him when he was younger, he's definitely, like, not like a hot guy, like a Calvin Klein commercial or something, but he was more like a boy next door, you know?
I mean, in this film, he's the character.
He was probably sick by now because he died 2 years after this movie of AIDS.
He actually was diagnosed with HIV while filming this movie.
Yeah, and that didn't take long. You know, it wasn't a pretty decline for him, that's for sure. You know, it was a fast decline, basically.
Well, what's odd about that is, like, back in the day, around that time, in the late 80s, early 90s, like, I remember the big AIDS scare or whatever, because I'm old enough to remember that. Like, these days, if you contact HIV, or contract HIV, I think they have, like, a medical cocktail that you can keep taking for the rest of your life, and you don't actually get full-blown AIDS.
Right, because if you get full-blown AIDS, it's a difference between the two things, and if you get the full-blown AIDS, you're probably not going to make it.
No, AIDS has a 100% fatality rate.
Yeah.
But the thing about contracting HIV these days is you don't, not like back in 1990, you don't have a 100% chance of contracting AIDS anymore.
Right, well, it doesn't have to get to that point because of the stuff that they can give you for.
One of our first looks at the young Norman Bates, which is played by Henry Thomas, the E.T. kid, who I don't think does a very good job. Then again, he's only the second guy ever to play Norman Bates at this point.
Right.
I know we've had a few others now with the remake and with Bates Motel.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about the Psycho remake. What a mess.
But I didn't think Henry Thomas did a great job here, but at the same time, I don't know if that's really that he didn't do a great job or just that I'm so used to seeing Anthony Perkins do such a strong job
right. With
the same character that if anybody else had played, you know what I'm saying? If anybody else plays Norman Bates, then it's just not as good.
Well, you know what? I'll say this. He wasn't creepy at all, and if you watch the show on A&E, that guy is creepy, and he's playing the same age or about the same age. I think it's a lack of creepiness.
Speaking of age, I think there's like an age discrepancy here.
Yeah.
Because this kid's like 15, 16 years old, right?
Right.
In the movie. And in the Psycho movie, they say that Norman Bates' mom died 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Which would put Norman Bates during the Psycho movie at 25, 26 years old.
Right.
I thought he was much older than that. Like in his 30s, early 30s.
No, because he was actually born in 1932. So he would have been 28.
I think we discussed that in the Psycho movie. I think he just comes off older, I guess.
Yeah, he does, kind of, a little bit.
So the first time we look at young Norman Bates or whatever, he, like we've said for three podcasts now, Norman Bates, he gets ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of similar to the Ashley Bates Motel
mm-hmm.
series.
Yeah.
This like some random town chick just takes interest in Norman Bates. And I know I don't know you very well, Jessica, just from your comments and emails, but it seems to me if you lived in Fairvale, California, that you would be digging on some Norman Bates.
You know, it's hard to say, but I will say that I tend to like guys that are problem-ridden.
Problem-ridden and quiet and maybe
less. No, not necessarily quiet, just, you know, weird ones. Ones that are kind of crazy. And I would definitely put him in the category of crazy. I mean, I prefer not to go out with any murderers, but, you know, hey, you don't always know what people have done in their past or what they're capable of in the future.
Okay, well, after we're done recording the show, I will give you Morty's cell phone number.
Yeah.
He's currently single. he'll be like older gentlemen.
If his skin's falling off, I might not be able to look past that.
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So the first time we see young Norman, he's getting aggressively hit on by a town chick who basically does everything except for take Norman's penis and put it in her.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
Right?
Right.
So, how does Norman react to this? Like he reacts to any woman who comes onto him. He kills her. And the thing that's kind of sad about that is they use the original music from the shower scene in the first Psycho.
Uh-huh.
And this scene just wasn't nearly as effective.
Oh my God, no. I actually wrote down that the killing itself was extremely fake looking. You could almost kind of see the knife wasn't going in. It was like retracting when it hit her. You know what I mean?
Plus, he kept stabbing her in the shoulder.
I know. Stupid.
Which didn't make any sense.
I didn't like her because I didn't like her boobs.
I'm not one to criticize boobs.
Well, if she was young, which she looked like she was probably in her 20s, she might need to, or did back then anyway, may need to seek the advice of a plastic surgeon. She was also saggy.
I mean, they were some odd-looking breasts, especially when compared to Olivia Hussey, whose breasts you see later on in the film.
Yes, very flapjack-like for that young girl, a young, unfortunate girl.
But again, my take on that always is, if a girl's willing to show me her boobs, I'm never going to say anything bad about them.
Complain.
Exactly.
Well, that's good of you.
I'm not like Norman Bates, who if you show him your boobs, he will kill you. Or at least Mother will kill you.
Yeah.
What's odd about this, at this point, Mother's already dead. Even in the flashbacks of the prequel,
right?
Like the timing is all screwed up. Like there's no, it's not a linear story. Like we get Mama's dead, Mama's not dead, Mama's dead. Yeah. So I just don't understand that at all. It's already kind of convoluted.
And didn't he just look stupid in that costume that he used, the mom costume when he killed her, when he killed that girl? Like, he didn't even look scary.
He looked like a clown.
Yeah, it wasn't effective. Because, I mean, I can remember seeing the very end, like, when you get to the end of the original Psycho. And
yeah.
That was kind of terrifying.
Well, anytime Perkins dresses in that outfit through all the first three movies, it's effective.
Yeah.
But this is like a baby version of that same outfit. It's the outfit his mom puts him in.
Right.
Because through the flashbacks, he and his mom have this sort of, I wouldn't say incestuous, but they go out of their way to make sure that you know it wasn't incestuous.
Right.
But it still was kind of an incestuous relationship.
Right.
I mean, who does that with their mom?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can't cut the apron strings, there's a problem.
I mean, anytime that you're rolling on the floor with your mom and you're in a position where in any other movie, the two characters would probably kiss. That this is weird. That's incestuous to me. In that same situation, Norma Bates, played by Olivia Hussey, gets pissed off that Norman Bates gets excited physically. Like he's laying on his mom and he gets a hard on. And she gets pissed and tells him that's only to be used for a wee wee. And basically throws him in the closet and makes him wear women's clothing. Do we think that Norma Bates wished that Norman was a girl? Like, she wishes she had a little girl instead of a little boy?
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, not from my perspective. I think she was just, like, weird, you know? Like, she was one of those people who had one side, like, had two sides to her. Like, she seemed kind of promiscuous with the boyfriend, but yet... And then I also think she was very, like, possessive of Norman. Like, you know, she wouldn't get the attention from him if he was having a girlfriend. So she made him feel bad about his sexuality.
I do think that one thing this film does well is there are a lot of women out there who would use their son as a surrogate man of the house or whatever.
Right.
And then when they actually do get a man of the house, the son has become dependent on the mother at this point. They just kind of shun the son to the side in favor of the boyfriend.
Right.
I think that happens a lot, like, in real life.
Right.
So, kudos to this movie for, like, pointing that out, I guess. Norma Bates seemed like she's a very reserved and confidential person. Like, she's an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems weird that she would pick up the local bartender.
Yeah, but my whole point to you is that I think that the whole... Like, I just saw, like, a real story that sort of reminded me of this a little bit, which is that, like, you can have a person who, the way that they put themselves out to most people is that they are, one way, let's say like a church person, but then if you talk to people who, like, maybe their kids, people that live with them, whatever, like, here they have this whole other life where they're, like, doing whatever, something that doesn't go along with their church personality. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying now. So, yeah, okay, basically, that would actually make a lot more sense because the kind of foreshadows Norman's split personality.
Right, like, she throws his comic book in the trash and tells him that he's filthy, but yet she's shacking up in her house in front of him with this kind of smarmy guy, and
like, making him serve them hand and foot, basically.
Right, exactly, and so that's my whole point, is that, like, no one would know that about her except for her son. So people on the outside would think that she's this, like, quiet person, or maybe she goes to church, or she... whatever, and then here, really, if you talk to her kid, he's like, yeah, she's like, kind of slutty.
That's a good point. Way to shoot down my my bartender thing.
Well, I mean, that really is reading into it, but I kind of think it... because I think that's how there are real people who are like that.
No,
not like a two-personality, like, not even like a, you know, somebody who has multiple personalities, just somebody who has one way that they show to the world, and then that's like their man. And then when they go home, or when they're wherever in their private life, the mask comes off.
Yeah, that's being two-faced.
We call
that two-faced here in Indiana.
Two-faced, like a backstabber, or just two-faced,
yeah,
like having...
kind of the both. It can go both ways.
Okay. Well, this is the example that I'll give you. If you work in an office or you work in a corporate setting, you have to have a game face,
sure,
for your job. But you could be like an alcoholic that beats the daylights out of your wife and kids when you go home and surfs the internet for all kinds of porn. But no, if you're good at what you do in terms of your job and you want to be successful, then you're able to maintain that. So that means, like, you don't go, like, to the company party and start, like, hitting on other employees. You don't get wrecked, you know, in public or whatever. I'm not that person. I'm the same person no matter what.
That's basically, you just described Morty.
Morty.
He's, you know, when he's at work, he's picking up dog testicles, the floor, and roadkill. And then he comes home and he beats me. He verbally abuses me. And, you know,
he's got the game face at work, but then he comes home and he's like a totally different person.
Exactly. He's searching the internet for porn and he's an alcoholic. With the boyfriend, they have to kind of give Norman a motive for wanting to kill his mom. Because Norman, at the beginning of the prequel segments, isn't going to kill his mom until she abandons him for this dude who's kind of a douche. So once again, for the fourth movie in a row, we kind of... it's an odd situation because we kind of sympathize with Norman in a way that we don't sympathize with other serial killers in these horror franchises. Like, we might root for Freddy Krueger, or we might root for Michael Myers. In the end, we realize, hey, he's, you know, this is a guy who randomly kills. Norman Bates, basically, every time he kills somebody, we know the reasons. And we kind of, he's kind of written as the victim, even though he's a killer. So the prequel segments pretty much end with how we know they're gonna end. Norman basically poisons their tea with some strychnine, and for some reason, I don't know if this was a product of the 1950s or whatever, but for some reason, these people drink a lot of tea.
They do.
I don't know if that's because Olivia Hussey is English, but she's drinking tea constantly.
Iced tea that he gave them.
Huh?
Was it hot or is it iced tea that he gave them?
It was iced tea because it had ice in it. And he put strychnine in it. And very gruesomely, his mother and his mother's boyfriend die. And then we get the little scene where he pulls his mother's body out of the casket and does a bunch of taxidermy stuff on her to get her in the condition that we see her at the beginning of Psycho.
Yeah, it took a long time for her to die, though.
I'm not familiar with strychnine, so I don't know, like, if...
Let's hope not.
Maybe I should get familiar with strychnine, living with Morty and everything.
What, so you can poison him?
No, in case he tries to poison me.
Oh. Well, maybe you should just, like, not give him anything that he... or not drink anything that he makes for you. Or you know, eat anything either. For that.
Here's what would happen. If I got poisoned by strychnine,
uh-huh.
like, and it took as long as it takes Livia Hussey to die,
uh-huh.
I could probably get a podcast out before I died. And be like, someone call the police. Morty did this to me. This is the end of the podcast. Signing off.
I think you might be able to survive it. It depends on how much the person gave you. Like, they would have to give you a certain amount to kill you. It's not just, like, automatically if they give you any, you die.
Well, he gave them enough to kill them. So, yeah, he's, at this point, as a young man, he's killed a girl who showed him her boobs, his mom... who he's probably seen her boobs as well. Her mom, his mom's boyfriend, and an, for some reason, an older lady who decided to just like do him in the middle of a car, which is kind of odd because you have 12 cabins there.
Right.
Like, why don't you go into one of the rooms?
Yeah, I didn't really understand that either, and I didn't understand that choice of woman either. Like, it was the same. Where did he get these people?
These the people who don't go on the main highway and end up at the base motel, they're not normal people.
His love interest in that one movie was way better looking than any of the people that the ladies in this movie.
From Psycho 3?
Well, Psycho, whatever the one that Meg Tilly was in,
Psycho
she's
2.
A girl.
Yeah, well, like you said earlier, dudes will just stick it in anything.
That's true.
Except for Norman Bates. I guess in a way, because he'll stick his knife in anything.
Right. That's true.
In the modern day portion of the movie, there's several scenes where Ed, who's Norman Bates, is talking to Fran, the radio host, and declares that he has to kill someone and that he's a killer. And we find out the person that he wants to kill is his wife, who also was his psychologist, because she tricked him into knocking her up, and Norman Bates has decided that he cannot have children because his psychosis is genetic.
Right. He's too afraid that he'll have a monster.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate concern.
Probably since the mother was kooky and he's kooky.
Hey, I've killed a bunch of people. Maybe I shouldn't have children. So despite the attempts of the radio staff to get him not to kill anybody, he's decided that he wants to kill anyway, and then we never see them again, so their story really isn't completed, which makes it kind of weird.
No.
Let me ask you this. As a female, he calls his wife, and he's been acting strange, because he's Norman Bates, that's all he knows how to do, and he says, instead of coming home tonight, can you meet me at the old place where I used to kill a bunch of people?
Right.
Are you immediately saying, oh yeah, sure, I'll meet you out there?
It would depend, but, like, I had a crazy boyfriend, and depending on how he was acting, I might have said no if he asked me to do something like that, because I'd have been afraid of him, because he's a kook.
That's what I would think that a woman with Norman Bates and the one that knew his whole history would think, but she goes out there, meets him at his, he calls it his mom's house, it's the old Bates Motel and house, and basically what you think is going to happen happens. He chases her down with the old knife. And basically puts a knife to her throat before he figures out, I don't want to kill this lady because she's my wife and she has sex with me.
Right.
Uh-huh. Is that marriage over now?
Not necessarily.
If a dude held a knife to your throat, even though he is married to you, I think if it was me, I'd be out of there.
But I think it depends on the people. Because there's a lot of women that put up with getting, you know, the crap beaten out of them, or threatened, or attacked, or all kinds of stuff. They stay with the person because they don't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah, that's true. Luckily for her, Norman decides he doesn't want to kill her, so he lets her go. Then he decides that the only way he's going to get this monkey off his back is if he burns down the house.
Yep.
For some reason, we get like 10 minutes of, is Norman going to get out of the house? Is Norman not going to get out of the house? Which...
Wait a minute. You know what I hated? I hate the music.
During that scene?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the music.
It was like old fashioned. Like it sounded like all of a sudden it sounded like I was in a movie in the '50s.
Well, maybe that was the point because the Psycho story started in the '50s, but I don't remember it. I'll have to go back and rewatch that scene. But now he's burnt down the Bates home, so all of his demons have been defeated. Except for the very last scene, we hear Mother's voice calling from the root cellar.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem to make any sense to me, because I'm feeling like, okay, if you burnt down the Bates house, then obviously you're ending things for good. But so why give us a cliffhanger? So I didn't like that, but other than that...
Not the end at all.
If you think this is going to be the very last movie, then I'm okay with you burning down the house.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this is probably the last movie that kind of matters, because... Once you know Anthony Perkins has HIV, you know that he's not going to play the role again.
Uh-uh. And you want to know a little bit of trivia?
I do want to know a little bit of trivia.
About him.
About Anthony Perkins?
He got married in 1973 to this woman called Barry Berenson.
He got married to a woman?
Yep, and he had two kids. I do believe he was gay. I don't know what he did in his free time. Obviously, he did something that caused him to get sick and die, because it wasn't from his wife's, and she didn't have it, but...
I thought it was pretty well known that he was gay.
Yeah, but he was married from 1973 until the time that he died. And then his wife had the misfortune of getting on Flight 11 on September 11th, 2001, and you know what happened with that.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at probably what you're looking at, but I did not know that, yeah.
I thought that was really creepy.
That is kind of creepy. That's a good piece of trivia.
Yeah, I like that.
Anthony Perkins, aside from that, has the distinction of being called the most difficult actor that Mick Garris has ever worked with, because he was so adamant about protecting the Psycho legacy. But apparently he really liked this film, and he thought it was the best of the sequels.
Oh, dear.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with...
his brain was fried from AIDS.
Maybe. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about Psycho 4 before we go on to ratings?
No, and I did... one thing. I did not like the ending. I think he should have murdered her.
I'm sure that was one of the endings that they filmed.
Yeah.
And I think that...
I don't like a happy ending in a horror movie. It's stupid.
Maybe Mick Garris... I understand that, but at the same time, this isn't your typical horror villain.
Yeah, sure.
Like I said, through four films, he's been the victim. We've sympathized with him. We saw why he's was driven insane. Not to justify his killings, but at the same time, it's not like mindless killing like, you know, Jason Voorhees.
No, I definitely think he's a sympathetic character. I think it's possible to sympathize with, you know, that kind of character, of course, but I don't think it's reasonable to think he would just suddenly decide to stop killing people.
Apparently his psychologist did, because she married him.
Yep, well, she likes those killers.
I'm okay with the ending, if it's the last Psycho movie, which it kind of is. I'm okay with the Psycho house getting burned down.
Why is it kind of the last one?
I just say it's kind of the last one because of you're still, and I'll talk about this next week in the wrap-up show, but there's still interest in the Psycho franchise. There's still interest in Norman Bates' character. With the success of Bates Motel, I could totally see them making another Psycho movie.
Well, next time, don't get a goddamn comedian to play Norman Bates.
I'm with you. No, so that's Psycho 4. At one point, Norman Bates refers to something as a soul cancer. I think that's kind of how I would refer to this movie.
Mm.
Give me cancer of the soul. Jessica, you're very familiar, I'm sure, with our rating system.
Just refresh my memory, please.
Well, here's how it works. On a scale of 1 to 10, 0 being the absolute most worst, terrible thing you've ever seen. An example, Final Destination 5. 10 being the best movie ever written. An example, Scream. And anywhere in between. And you can use halves.
Okay.
So it's actually a 20-point scale disguised as a 10-point scale.
I didn't like it. I didn't think it was good. I mean, there are good components to it, you know? Like a 4, you know? Because it's definitely not the worst horror movie I've ever seen in my life. Not by a long shot.
I think I also was going to go with 4. I was actually going to go lower than that until we started talking about it, and I realized that the writing isn't nearly as bad as I thought it was.
No.
Because it brings a lot of what happens to Norman alive. I think that if you've watched the other Psycho movies, you should probably watch this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a must-see for sure, but if you've seen Psycho 1, 2, and 3, you probably should. I don't even know you could get. I don't think you can get Psycho 4 on DVD without Psycho 2 and 3 anyway.
Well, you definitely can't see it from any website streaming except for YouTube.
Yeah, you can YouTube it in 7 different parts.
Right, I did see online that you have to buy it with another movie. It won't come by itself.
I would recommend seeing it just to see Anthony Perkins play Norman Bates one more time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main reason why I would recommend it to somebody. But so that's why I'm gonna give it like a round of 4 as well. So there we go. That's Psycho 4. We both gave it a 4, so that's fitting. And as always, if you want to defend this movie, if you want to defend Henry Thomas playing a young Norman Bates, or if you just want to talk about Olivia Hussey's boobs, then you can email us at reszombie7@gmail.com. You can email me, Morty, Hammer, Jessica, anybody that's been on the show. Everybody that's been on the show is also on the Facebook page, so you can leave a message on the Facebook page, the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast on Facebook. We're always down to respond to Facebook posts. Also, on Twitter, at ResZombie7 is our Twitter handle. I've been trying to learn how to use Twitter more often. I'm not as good as Hammer or Jessica. I've been trying to learn how to do the Friday shout-outs, which apparently is a big deal in the Twitter universe. I don't know how to do those yet. And last and certainly not least, go to the website. Zombie7.com is the website. You can listen to the episodes there. I just added a Hall of Fame page a couple nights ago. You can look at it. It takes like 1 second. You can subscribe to the new iTunes feed from the website. Just hit the iTunes button. It'll take you to a preview page, which will allow you to go into your iTunes and subscribe to the new feed, which you'll need to do because as of July 28th, the Podomatic feed will no longer exist. Do all of that stuff. I'll be back next week for a Psycho wrap-up show. And for the non-existent today, Morty, for Jessica, I am Ron Martin. This has been the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. We'll be back next week with a Psycho wrap-up show, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye!
Just a bad dream. Could it all be a bad dream or a nightmare? Is it my imagination, or have we lost our minds? It's surreal. It's just not believable. A grand absurdity.
Jessica, did you...
Well, do you think it'd be creepy if I watched SpongeBob SquarePants?
No.
Okay.
SpongeBob SquarePants was created by a nuclear explosion?
Oh.
And all of the radioactivity rained down the ocean, and that's why SpongeBob exists.
Okay. I didn't even know that.
That's a fan theory.
Okay.
You ever watch the show Ed, Edd n Eddy?
I have, but probably like maybe only one or two episodes.
The theory for that one is that all those kids are actually dead and they live in purgatory.
Yeah.
It's pretty creepy.
That is kind of creepy, yeah.